From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Today, producer and composer Adrian Young. He grew up with hip-hop, and after sampling a lot of soul music and European film scores from the 60s, he became obsessed with those sounds. He's managed to combine them in a new album featuring William Hart, who was the lead singer of the 60s soul group The Delphonics, with backing music inspired by film composer Ennio Morricone. Young also produced and composed the new album by the Wu-Tang Clan's Ghostface Killah called 12 Reasons to Die.
Basically, this is a score to a vintage Italian horror film, a faux vintage Italian horror film that takes place in 1968.
And our book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead, which is described as a sort of feminist manifesto by its author, Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg. First news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Adrian Young, had the dream of recording with the influential hip-hop group the Wu-Tang Clan and the popular 60s soul group the Delfonics. He's just done both. He produced an album by Wu-Tang's Ghostface Killa and composed the music on it. That album, 12 Reasons to Die, will be released next month, and they'll debut the album Thursday night at South by Southwest. And Young just produced an album with the Delfonics lead singer, William Hart, called Adrian Young Presents the Delfonics. Young wrote or co-wrote the songs, he composed the music, and he plays most of the instruments. Although he grew up with hip-hop and started off as a DJ, Young is obsessed with music from the 60s and 70s, including blaxploitation film scores. He wrote the score for a satirical blaxploitation homage called Black Dynamite. Before we hear a track from his new Delfonics album, here's a couple of things you should hear first that will give you a sense of the sound he was striving for. He wanted the drama of Ennio Morricone's film scores. Here's a bit of Morricone's most famous score from the spaghetti western The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Adrian Young wanted to wed that Morricone sound with the soul sound of the Delfonics in the 60s and early 70s. Here's one of their hits from 1968. This is La La Means I Love You. La 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 I love you. Oh, baby, please now. La 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 me. I love you. If I ever saw a girl. So now let's hear how Young has combined those two inspirations in his new album, Adrian Young Presents the Delfonics, featuring the Delfonics lead singer, William Hart. That's Just Love from the new album Adrian Young Presents the Delfonics. Adrian Young, welcome to Fresh Air. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
I started with that track because to my ears, it's the best illustration from the new album of how you've combined the soul sound and the Ennio Morricone spaghetti western, like drama sound, with the chimes and the guitar and the buzzy instrument, whatever that is.
Fuzz guitar.
Okay. So why did you want to combine soul music and that Ennio Morricone kind of sound?
Well, to me, the Ennio Morricone kind of sound is a derivative of soul music. A lot of Ennio Morricone's music is just, it's very soulful, very cinematic, and very psychedelic. So the sounds that were used, like you said, the chimes, the bells, the fuzz guitar, it's something that is nostalgic and speaks to a listener in a different way. You don't usually hear those types of sounds in today's music. But when you hear those sounds, it takes you back to the music I like the best, organic music that is composed by real composers at a time when recording was at its height, which I believe is around 68 to 73.
I love the way you said by real composers, because I think, you know, one of the things I miss in a lot of hip hop, in spite of the samples, is the sense of like a through composition, that somebody's thought through a whole composition and you hear the drama build and, you know, it kind of tells a complete story in one person's completely orchestrated, composed vision.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, you know, I'm a guy that I say I'm hip hop forever. I'm a hip hop guy. I was really raised on hip hop, and hip hop introduced me basically to all the music I listen to now. And what's sad to me is that I can't really listen to hip hop that much anymore. You know, I mean, there's a lot of great hip hop out there, but I'm not an avid fan of hip hop. I always say to people that I left hip hop in 97, meaning that I departed from listening to predominantly hip hop and just started really getting into records from the late 60s, early 70s. And once I made that change, I realized how much great music was made back in the day. And it started to become apparent how much we've lost in music. You know, today on the radio, they're playing a bunch of overcompressed music that is not very much thought out. And for me personally, I have no, it doesn't do anything for me. So,
see, like you're like the everybody's dream of what happens when a DJ is sampling records, which is they find a sample. The dream is they find a sample and then they go and listen to whole records and really enjoy the music and get deeper and deeper into that person's records or in that genre of music. I don't know how often that actually happens. I think a lot of people just keep looking for the sample, just keep looking for that groove or beat or whatever.
But
you fulfilled that dream. You got really deep into music.
Well, you know, it's a good point. Like with me, in around 97, for Christmas, my parents bought me an MPC 2000 sampler and a little 8-track cassette recorder. And I started sampling records and, you know, producing hip-hop beats. And it got to the point where I innately realized that the music I liked the most was made by people that played instruments. And I realized at this time also that if I wanted to be the best musician, the best producer, I had to learn how to play instruments. Because what would happen, it goes back to literally what you just said. I would find a break or find a little sample that I wanted to loop. And let's just say that it goes ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-do-do-doon-doon. And I like how that goes. I like how that sounds. But I'm praying to God that when it goes da-doon, da-doon, da-do-do-doon-doon, it goes da-doon, da-doon, da-do-do-doon-doon. And I would never get that. I would hear all this stuff in my head, you know, but I would never get it. So I was limited to what I could find on that record and then what I could also synthesize by sampling other records and basically morphing them together to make a new track. But there's a limitation. And my head was going a lot faster than what I was finding in these records. So one day I just bought a piano, and then the next day I bought a bass guitar, then I bought an electric guitar, and then I just started playing these things. At that time I was in college, I would come home every day and just play the instruments, and I would try to get my mechanics, my ability to play these instruments to match the speed of my compositional perspectives in my head, you know. And it got to the point where they met and I was able to really be who I wanted to be, you know. So it took something that was a derivative, hip hop, to take me all the way back to try to push things forward now.
My guest is Adrian Young. He produced, co-wrote, and plays most of the instruments on the new album, Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics. And his new Ghostface Killah album will be released next month. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. So if you're just joining us, my guest is Adrian Young, and he's a composer and musician and producer. He produced the new Ghostface Killah album and has a new album called Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics, in which William Hart, the lead singer of the Delphonics, is featured in a setting that kind of combines soul music and Ennio Morricone kind of music.
Yes.
Let's hear another track from Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics, and then I'll ask you about the story of how you met William Hart, the lead singer of the Delphonics, who you work with on this. So I want to play Stop and Look and You Have Found Love, which is the single that's released from the album.
Yeah.
You know, the Delphonics had their hits in, what was the 70s?
60s and 70s, 60s late 60s, and, early 70s.
Yeah, La La Means I Love You.
Ready or Not.
Yeah.
Here I Come. Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time? I mean, they had like 20 top 100 hits. I mean, they had a lot back then. You know, Somebody Loves You, Girl. I mean, all that.
And William Hart has a great falsetto, but he's 68 now, and there are very few 68-year-olds who still have a functioning falsetto.
Yeah, I know. He takes care of himself. He takes care of himself. But to answer the question of what this song is, basically when I was thinking about how I wanted this album to sound, I didn't want it to be a mere rehash of old 70s soul. I can't stand that. You know, to me, I wanted to go back in time. I wanted to go travel back in time to about 69, and I wanted to compete with the other soul groups that are out. So when me and William were sitting in the studio, these are things that we discussed, you know, and what I wanted to do was find a song that felt like Ready or Not, that had the sentiment, kind of a hip-hop flavor, funky. Timing is a little off, but there's a super warm groove in there and a message. Basically, I wanted to have something that had, that, like I said, mixed hip-hop, which is more 90s hip-hop, early 90s hip-hop, with early 70s soul. So Quincy Jones said something that I feel is very imperative to soul music, to modern soul music. He said, hip hop mastered the drums, but hip hop never really mastered composition, which I agree with 150,000,000%. Now, so that being said, I wanted the song to have a hip hop sentiment as far as the drums are concerned. So the drums are a little raw and dirty, but still high in the mix. The bass line, I wanted the bass line to kind of be fat and warm as like a Curtis Mayfield track. And then the bells and whistles and all that, that's something that Ennio Morricone would have done. And also, I used something called a bell tree on here. A bell tree, and I mixed it with a timpani. And this is something that Tom Bell did, actually, on the Delphonics' first single, He Don't Really Love You. So I wanted to mesh all that together and try to form something new.
Okay, so this is Stop and Look from the new Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics album with William Hart singing lead.
Thank you.
That's Stop and Look from the new album Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics, featuring the Delphonics' original lead singer, William Hart.
Yes.
And you know, I have to tell you, and don't take this the wrong way.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, as I said, William Hart's 68 and he's still singing in a falsetto, but I don't think he has like quite the control that he would have when he was, you know, decades younger.
Right.
And there's something about it that almost sounds like it's a vinyl pressing that was pressed something just like a little bit off center. So it's just like a little wavery, and it makes it sound like it makes it especially like ear catching and kind of odd.
Well, basically what I did, I mean, I have a, so my studio, let's just back up a little bit. My studio is fully analog. There's nothing modern. There's not even a computer in my studio. Everything's old. And, you know, old instruments, old Pro Audio. The mic that he's singing out of is an old ribbon mic. It's everything's old. So I record, and then when I when I'm mixing, I mix down in a way that they would have back then also, which is not, quote, perfect. With William, he's still a great singer. He doesn't sound exactly 100% like he did when he was younger, but he still sounds great. There's a modern, there's a modern mature charm to what he's doing right now that I wanted to really capture and own on this album. So in doing that, I had to also balance the huge reverb that they used to use back then. And I panned a lot of it. And I also mixed this down to quarter-inch tape. That's what they used to do back in the day. So my quarter-inch tape machine is an old finicky machine as well. So that there's also a charm in hearing a mix that's mixed down to an old finicky quarter-inch tape machine that comes off at the end sounding somewhat strange yet interesting.
So how did you get to work with William Hart of the Delphonics?
Okay. One day on Twitter, a little over a year ago, I tweeted the question, who is better, the Dramatics or the Delphonics? And people went back and forth saying who they thought was better. And one guy said, hey, I know William Hart of the Delphonics. He's like, yo, I'm a fan of your music, man. I would love for you and him to do music together. And I mean, to me, it's always been a dream to do something with the Delphonics. So a day later, I'm on the phone with William Hart and we're speaking for like 2 hours. And then we're speaking the next day for like 2 hours. And we hit it off in a way that was just cosmic. It was strange because I understood everything he was saying. I studied his music for so long. I studied music that was derivative of the music that he created, and to be able to listen to a legend and a legend like that, you know, I didn't want to get off the phone.
So how old are you, can I ask?
I'm 34.
Okay, so you're obsessed with the 60s and the 70s, with music and movies and graphics of that era. Did you grow up with that in any way? I know you found it through looking through record bins for samples, and then you wanted to hear more and more and more. But did your parents or grandparents listen to music of that era or talk about movies from that period?
No, you know what's strange? This is one thing that's really strange about black people. And this is something that we learned on Black Dynamite. So I was an editor on Black Dynamite, and I also did the score for Black Dynamite.
Which I should say is an homage to and a satire of the blaxploitation films of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, so this is something that was released in 2009. Now, Scott Sanders, the director of Black Dynamite, is one of my very close friends. And Mike Jaw White, which played Black Dynamite, is another good friend. And I learned a lot about them. And we taught each other a lot of things. And one of the things that Scott Sanders made me realize is that when a black person is done with something, they leave. The black culture does not go back. When they're done, they are out. And what happens is that white people come in and they go back and they study and bring a different approach to it and preserve what a lot of black people did. And this, the reason why I say that here is that I'm that white guy. You know, I'm the black dude that loves old black culture. I also love old white culture. I just love history. But I'm the guy that wants to bring things back and push them forward. A lot of black people don't like that kind of stuff. They don't like doing that kind of stuff, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to kind of go back and push things forward.
Adrian Young will be back in the second half of the show. His new album with William Hart is called Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics. They'll perform tonight in New York. Young also produced the new Ghostface Killah album, which will be released next month. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Celebrating Fresh Air's 25 years, the Neubauer Family Foundation salutes WHYY and listeners like you, committed to new ideas and civilized conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Angie's List, providing reviews of local contractors, dentists, electricians, and mechanics to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. From Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And from Ally Bank, who believes intelligent news and knowledgeable customer service should be available around the clock. Learn more at allybank.com. This is NPR.
Coming up, Adrian Young talks about conceiving, composing, and producing the new album by the Wu-Tang Clan's Ghostface Killah. And Maureen Corrigan weighs in on the new book by Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg, Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead. Sandberg describes it as a sort of feminist manifesto. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with producer, composer, and musician Adrian Young. He has a new album called Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics, which features the 60s soul group's lead singer William Hart. Next month is the release of Young's other new album with Ghostface Killah called 12 Reasons to Die. So you've said that one of your goals has been to produce a record that sounded like the Delphonics, produced by RZA, the producer of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes.
And, you know, with Ennio Morricone mixed in. And
yes.
Now you've actually produced an album not only with William Hart of the Delphonics, but you've produced an album with Ghostface Killah, who is
yes.
one of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes.
So how did that come about?
So RZA has a label called Soul Temple Records, and he started this with Bob Perry. So I'm at South by Southwest last year. And about a week before I went to South by Southwest, I was contacted on Facebook by Bob Perry saying, "Hey man, I love your music and would love for you to do a Wu-Tang oriented project." So at that moment I said, wow, another one of my dreams is about to come into fruition. So I took about a week to develop a story. So this album is called Adrian Young Presents 12 Reasons to Die, starring the Ghostface Killah. And basically, this is a score to a vintage Italian horror film, a faux vintage Italian horror film that takes place in 1968. So in my head, I pictured all this artwork, all this old Argento type artwork, and I wanted it to be something that Morricone would have scored back then. And then I wanted to pull in all of that Morricone sentiment, all of that old American soul sentiment. And then I wanted to kind of fabricate that in a way that the RZA would have put the album together had he been a producer in the late 60s. So that was my whole vision. So like with this whole thing with the Ghostface album, I wanted to create another world. You know, I tell people, I don't make music, I make worlds. And what I mean by that is that I'm not the guy that's going to make a single for somebody or make a single for somebody there. It's like, I want, when people are listening to my music, they're entering a world. You know, it's just like when I first heard King Crimson back in the day, you know, I mean, I entered their world. If somebody listened to the Beatles, you enter their world. So back to this Ghostface 12 Reasons to Die thing, you know, I put this Italian crime horror story together and close my eyes to really think about what the visuals would be. What would Ghostface Killah look like in this? You know, what would the characters look like in this? How do we enhance that with just audio?
Did Ghostface Killah come in and just lay his rhymes down over this elaborate scenario that you'd created? Or do you feel like he got in the spirit of the story you'd created in your mind and the images that you created in your mind?
Okay, so basically, I'm a real control freak. Big time control freak. So with this Ghostface album, I had some trepidation regarding what he wanted to bring to the story, because I respect the guy big time, you know, and I want to make sure that all of his thoughts and feelings were incorporated in this project that we mutually share. So what I did, if you see the artwork for the Ghostface Killah album, I shot all that stuff. And actually what I did is I bought a camera and bought a whole bunch of vintage lenses. And I spent about 2 months studying vintage photography, buying old vintage photography books, learning how they use their lenses, learning how they adjusted their lighting in order to be able to shoot these images that took me back to that time frame. And I put these photos together. And then I also put a script together, a full script with the 12 songs. I said, you know, in part one, you should be rapping from 103 to 145. And then this is what you should be talking about. This is what we need to talk about in this story, because it's a full story. So every song, he has something that he's supposed to elaborate upon. So when I put the script together, I gave it to Bob Perry and Andrew Kelly, the A&R. And they made their modifications to it and then submitted it to Ghost. And then Ghostface did all his recording, actually, in New York, and sent me everything.
So part of the lyric in the rap is, I'm a black vigilante killer. It's the almighty rise of the murderous Ghostface. Murder, murder,
yes.
Kill, kill, kill.
Yes.
Does that fit with your story, or does that sound like...
Yes.
Just,
no, it's not,
okay.
It's not ignorant black... like hip hop, like, oh, I got my gun, I'm gonna shoot it. No, it's nothing like that. It's very contextual. It's something like, this is a vintage Italian crime story. Okay, I'll say some of the story. So, Ghostface Killah historically has a character called Tony Starks. He uses this is one of his alter egos when he's doing albums. He's been doing this since the 90s, okay? So in my story, Tony Starks is a member of a white Italian crime family. He's the only black guy in there. And the Italian crime family, they're called the 12 DeLucas, okay? So he's the only black guy in the 12 DeLucas in the late 60s. And he's doing runs for them. He's doing hits. He's, you know, making them money. But because he's black, he can't rise in the ranks. So what he decides to do is start his own criminal faction against the 12 DeLucas. So a war ensues between them. And then he falls in love with one of the women of the 12 DeLucas. She betrays him. And then the 12 DeLucas kill him. And then... everything else is, I can't say it, but you get the point. So this is why he's saying that stuff. At this point, he's getting revenge. So basically what this is supposed to be, this is supposed to be like a blaxploitation movie that was made for Italy.
There's a reference in the opening of the track that we're going to hear, which is Rise of the Ghostface Killah, in which he refers to vinyl, and I know you're obsessed with vinyl records, so just explain that reference and then we'll hear it.
Okay. So that's RZA. So RZA is narrating the entire album.
Oh, okay.
So he does that at the beginning, and if you listen to that, or when we listen to it, you'll hear a choir going la 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 la. And basically what I wanted to do, I wanted to capture early 70s horror nostalgic element that I feel like has been lost in modern cinema. And basically it's that type of anti-Christy, The Omen, good versus evil type thing. That's what this is supposed to be. So when we hear him making that reference, I'm trying to figure out if I should just tell this story right now.
No, just do the reference
okay.
thing. It's because it's.
Well, he,
it sounds
okay,
to me like
well,
he's
he
baking
says,
people into vinyl recordings, but.
Okay, well, basically what happens. So, you know what? I'm backing up. I'm letting it loose. I don't care. Let's go. Okay? I'm with Terry Gross right now. I'm going to go. All right? So this is how it goes. Tony Starks fell in love with one of the women of the 12 DeLucas, and she lures him into a trap. And what happens is she invites him to an old record manufacturing plant in Italy, okay, to meet her. So he goes there, and the 12 DeLucas sabotage the meeting by killing his people and also killing him by burning him in a barrel of acetate. Acetate is what is used to make records. So when they burn him in this acetate, when they burn Tony Starks in this acetate, they make 12 vinyl records, 4 souvenirs of his death, to give to each one of the 12 DeLucas. And when these records are played, the spirit of the Ghostface Killah comes out to kill them all. So when you hear the song Murder, Murder, Kill, 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 and all that stuff, and I'm a black village vigilante, pro-violence, he's now Ghostface Killah coming back to kill all these people. So that's what this is. That's when Tony Starks becomes the Ghostface Killah.
Okay, and excuse me, I laughed in the middle of that. I know it's this big drama, but I think it's just hysterical the way you've managed to work your obsession with vinyl records into into this horror revenge story. Wonderful. Let's not put it off anymore.
Go for it.
So this is from the new Ghostface Killah album, and the album's called 12 Reasons to Die. It was composed and written and conceived by my guest, Adrian Young. La 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 la.
The DeLucas pressed Tony's remain into 12 vinyl records, one for each member of the family. But little did they know, he would return. Murder, murder,
kill, kill, kill. When the gas starts to pump, I put the spark down. Grill. Hey, yo, late night, stuck in the limo.
That's from the new Ghostface Killah album, 12 Reasons to Die, which was composed, conceived, and produced by my guest, Adrian Young. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. So if you're just joining us, my guest is Adrian Young, and he's a composer and musician and producer. He produced the new Ghostface Killah album and has a new album called Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics. So let's get to DJing. What kind of DJing were you doing?
As far as DJing, I own a record store in downtown LA called the Art Form Studio, and it's a boutique record store and also a hair salon. So when you walk in, everything in there is vintage. You know, it's like all these vintage records on the wall. It's like everything. It's like people call it a museum. And it's a hybrid, you know, between the art of music and the art of hair. Now, what I do as a DJ represents what I have in my store. It's all, like, I love spinning old prog rock, old vintage soul stuff, and old soundtracks. You know, that's what I spin the most. So basically, I DJ for parties. I have a club called Bridges that we just had our 10-year anniversary, and it's a hybrid between like hip hop, funk, soul, house. And I'd spin at Bridges or spin at different parties. There's something that we do called Rendezvous, where we literally just spin vintage Italian soundtracks. That's it. You know, I mean, yeah, like, it's just eclectic stuff. I collect records and spin records because I like the music. I'm not the guy that spins records for people to dance to. And that's one hell of a craft. I just don't, it's just not enjoyable for me like that. You know, I like to spin music because I love what the music sounds like. And most of the music I love is, you know, it's slow. It's like 70 or 80 BPM. It's the slow stuff that you can't really dance to. So that's the kind of music I spin. So, you know, in a DJ set, I'll play some rare Ennio Morricone records and play some old Francis Lay type stuff to old soft porn Emmanuel type stuff. You know, I love all that old music, you know, and that's what I spin predominantly.
I'm glad you mentioned softcore porn.
Yes. My husband. Why do you love that I mentioned?
No, because my husband just brought back this. I don't remember his name, but I think he was German. Yeah. And there are these German softcore porn scores, and apparently he had a reputation outside of that. But they asked him to do these movies, and he kept doing more of them. And it's this really odd music. Cover had like women with their breasts naked and everything, and it's really just like it's hysterical, but the music's really interesting, though some of it sounds just like schlock, but the stuff that doesn't sound like schlock is pretty good.
Well, you know what it is, Jack? It's instrumental music that is very sexy. It's very sexy, and it's the chord changes are meaningful. You know, it's like basically telling stories without words. That's why I love that music so much. That's why I study that music so much.
I just thought I should mention for anybody who's thinking, why was her husband bringing home softcore more music with these pictures on it? And the answer is because he spends so much time in record stores, and this was playing, and he thought, wow, that is great. I got to know what it is, and that's what it was.
I have, in my record store, I have a wall of records, but on this wall of records, I have a list of just rare European softcore porn original records. I mean, they're all like aligned on the wall. I love that music.
Okay. Now, you love opera. One of the things you love is opera.
Yeah.
Which really surprised me, because that usually does not go with hip hop or with soul music. Yeah. How did you develop an interest in opera?
Well, I love music that can make somebody cry. I like to move people without saying a word. And opera, even though they're saying words, it's more like I always look at their vocals as a lead instrument. and how they play their lead instruments, like a violin, you know? And I just love the feeling, the emotion that is evoked, the passion behind the music. But also, the opera singer that I use for my, that's part of my band, her name is Brooke DeRosa. She showed me a lot of stuff that even pushed me further in it. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, it's just a world of great music. And this song that you're about to play, which is entitled Something About April, fuses soul, psychedelia, and the cinematic notions of having an or seeing an opera singer sing. You know, like I wanted to put all that together into one song.
Okay, so this is Something About April. And yes. Tell us the name of the opera singer and the soul singer we'll be hearing.
Okay, in Something About April, the lead singer of my Venice Dawn band, Lauren Oden, and he's also singing on the Black Dynamite score and everything else I do. He's a soul singer. And this album is called Something About April. This song is a title song called Something About April. And what Something About April actually means, it means that there's something about the month of April. And it represents springtime when everything's blooming, when everything's coming back. And that's what the opera singer represents. The black soul singer, he represents winter. So if you listen to the lyrics, he's talking about how it's dark and cold and, you know, should we come back together? She's saying it's spring again. We should let bygones be bygones and come back. And they represent both of these times of the year. And they also help to accentuate the disparity between these two feelings I was trying to capture in one song.
Well, Adrian Young, thank you so much for talking with us. It's really been fun. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Thank you for having me.
Adrian Young produced and co-wrote the new album Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics. And he conceived, composed, and produced the new Ghostface Killah album, 12 Reasons to Die. Young and Ghostface Killah will debut the album at South by Southwest Thursday night, and the Adrian Young Band will perform later that night. Here's Young's song, Something About April.
Something about April. Tunes of yesterday, the sparrow sings in harmony. Melodies of mystery. My soul can see the sun. Ooh, that lights the lights of love.
You can hear a track from Adrian Young's new album, Adrian Young Presents the Delphonics, on our website, freshair.npr.org. The new book, Lean In, is described by its author, Sheryl Sandberg, as a sort of feminist manifesto. But the book's pretty controversial in feminist circles. Coming up, our book critic Maureen Corrigan weighs in. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Sheryl Sandberg is chief operating officer at Facebook, and before that was a vice president at Google and chief of staff at the U.S. Treasury Department. It's an understatement to say that she's a powerful woman. Her first book, Lean In, was officially published yesterday, but it's been generating controversy for weeks. Our book critic Maureen Carrigan weighs in.
Sheryl Sandberg tells an anecdote in her new book, Lean In, about sitting down with her boss, Mark Zuckerberg, for her first performance review as chief operating officer at Facebook. Zuckerberg told her that her desire to be liked by everybody would hold her back. I hope she's worked on that problem, because over the past few weeks, there sure have been a lot of people hating on Sheryl Sandberg. Lean In, which Sandberg describes as sort of a feminist manifesto, has been slammed by Maureen Dowd, Jodi Kantor, Judith Shulevitz, and others for its elitism, for being hard on women and soft on institutional sexism, and for making an unfair exemplar of the 43-year-old Sandberg's own Amazonian accomplishments. She has 2 Harvard degrees and a personal worth just shy of $1 billion. Sandberg was named the 5th most powerful woman in the world by Forbes magazine. All this in addition to raising 2 young children in concert with a totally supportive spouse. Her critics, some of them without first reading her book, have belittled Lean In as a vanity project. The wittiest takedown I've read is a piece by Noreen Malone in The New Republic, which focuses on Sandberg's name-dropping. As Malone notes, the acknowledgments section of Lean In runs to 7.5 pages and lists 140 people, among them Oprah Winfrey, Gloria Steinem, Arianna Huffington, and Sandberg's old Treasury Secretary boss and undergraduate mentor, Larry Summers. Given all those heavy hitters pitching in, and considering the pre-publication feminist firestorm, you would think Sandberg's book would be a riveting read. But Lean In, and I'll tell you something. I dozed off twice while reading it. Most of the book is kind of blah, composed of platitudinous corporate speak intermixed with pallid anecdotes. Sandberg bolsters her argument about the need for women to lean in or assert themselves at home and at work with truisms such as equality between partners leads to happier relationships. Even though Oprah-esque, Sandberg resolves to speak her truth, mostly mild confessions follow. We hear about how Sandberg vomited her way through her 2 pregnancies at work, not something juicier like she drunkenly vomited all over Mark Zuckerberg at the last Facebook holiday party. Sandberg wrote Lean In with the help of a professional co-writer, Nell Scovell, and the book has that ironed-out quality of a collaborative project. If Mary Wollstonecraft had written this tepidly, the first women's movement might have wilted before it ever took root. But, there are still some compelling reasons why, echoing some of Sandberg's supporters, I'd optimistically slide Lean In into my teenage daughter's bookshelf. First of all, the final 2 chapters of the book are more hard-hitting, riskier, less worried about alienating those readers, like stay-at-home moms, who may not share Sandberg's vision. Sandberg kicks off her final chapter by saying, "For decades, we have focused on giving women the choice to work inside or outside the home. But we have to ask ourselves if we have become so focused on supporting personal choices that we're failing to encourage women to aspire to leadership." In her famous 2010 TED Talk on the dearth of female leadership, Sandberg sounds more like that, opinionated and challenging. I notice, by the way, that some of the feminists who've weighed in positively on Lean In, thinkers I respect like Rebecca Traister and Katha Pollitt, have acknowledged that they've attended invitation-only events hosted by Sandberg. I'm not suggesting that Sandberg slipped them a spare million or two to influence their reviews. Rather, it's obvious that she's dynamic and funny in person, and towards the end of Lean In, some of her intellectual charisma breaks through the blandness. Lean In is worth reading because, even though many of its observations about internalized sexism may be old hat to us older feminists, they're sadly still true. Women do denigrate themselves to be liked. They phrase assertions like questions and politely raise their hands while men grab the floor. I see it all the time in my classrooms. I still see that behavior in myself. Lean In may not be the most impassioned or entertaining feminist manifesto ever written, and sure, Sandberg is somewhat blinkered by her big bucks and privilege and inhibited by corporate caution. Yet it's great to have a woman with such a platform speak up about sexism. In a world full of crude, sometimes violent misogyny, Sandberg is following the first axiom of political organizing. Start where you live.
Marin Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at NPR Fresh Air and on Tumblr at nprfreshair.tumblr.com. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer is Roberta Shorrock. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Henry Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. John Myers directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world. From the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And from the SCAN Foundation, committed to aging with dignity and independence at thescanfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Mohsen Hamid talks about his new novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. The answer for his main character is by passing off boiled tap water as expensive bottled mineral water in a city which closely resembles Lahore, Pakistan, where Mohsen Hamid lives. His previous novel, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, has been made into a movie. Join us.